hand these out for me? And I think I got enough for everybody to have one. Maybe even if you, you know, for people to have their own copy. I'm not sure. I think I made 20. But every couple for sure, and individual. And you take a pen and you can use that as well. Did anyone bring a Bible verse to memorize? We don't actually have much of a Bible memory instruction in this, but if you have maybe Ephesians chapter 5 or chapter 6, any of those verses, that's what we're talking about. Last week, we were in Ephesians chapter 6, and we were talking about children. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And we're going to back up to Ephesians 5 and see where it really starts. We're kind of going backwards in the Bible here, but Ephesians chapter 5 is where we'll be today. And I've got extra copies. Thank you. I got a couple extras if anybody else wants one. Charity, did you get one? You're going to need this someday. Say, I'm not ever going to be a husband. No, but you might get one. Your grandpa needs it. I know he needs it for sure. Anyhow, we're studying the family. And this comes out of a series called God's Blueprint for the Happy Home. And there's a bunch of CDs in here. And I can burn off a copy for you. This is from Evangelist David Sommerdorf. And there's a book that goes with it. If you want to order your own set, you can do that. And don't tell them. They're not in here right now. But my children are all getting a set for Christmas because they're getting that age where, you know, Hannah's got a guy friend right now. And it's good for them to listen to it before they get married, when they're married, after they're married, when they start having children. This is a good series for all. So on one side, you've got the husbands and the outline. That's the side we're going to be on. On the other side, we'll look at that after a little while. But if you would like a copy of anything, let me know. This evangelist, David Sommerdorf, will be with us in a few years. We have him scheduled to come. But if you'd like a copy of anything, of course, if you want to listen to this, what I'm doing, you can always go on the sermon tab of our website and re-listen to anything, and you can download and make your own iPod or podcast or whatever out of it. So you can download those from right straight from our church website. Anyhow, today we are talking about husbands, and the last week and even Wednesday night we talked about the children. And so Ephesians chapter number 5 is before chapter 6, and that's where we were at with the children. Chapter 5 says in verse number 25, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth it and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, and of his flesh and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. That's a huge principle in the Bible concerning marriage. Two become one. This is a great mystery, and I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself. And the wife see that she reverence her husband. We'll talk about the wives next week, but we're looking at husbands today. And who's our example? Our example as a husband, who is our example of how we should love? Christ. In fact, at the end of chapter 4 and verse 32, and be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. And it says there in verse 25, husbands of chapter 5, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. Now, you think about that. How does Christ love his church? How many people get saved, and then eventually, because of their stubbornness or disobedience, God says, you know what, I'm going to take back your saved, and you're going to have to go to hell anyway because I'm done with you. Does God have? No, the Bible doesn't teach that. We don't lose our salvation according to the Bible. Some religions teach that, but that's because they have the wrong salvation. But salvation can't be taken away. Now, our relationship is permanent, but our fellowship might be broken. Our fellowship is something that can be altered. Now, if you and God are not as close as you used to be, who's the problem? Who moved? You did, not God, right? And so we need to recognize that sometimes fellowship is broken. There are good men out there who have wives who leave them for no good reason. And they are faithful to those wives, even in spite of the fact that they are not even loyal to their husbands. And I think those men are doing it because they read in Ephesians, as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. There's some great examples and great testimonies of people who didn't give up on their spouse in spite of everything going on behind the scenes. And our example is Christ, the love of Christ. And the Bible says in 1 John chapter 4, verse 19, we love him because he first loved us, not the other way around. And just some people I know that have exemplified that, husbands that have been very patient and loving to their wives in spite of things that weren't necessarily good on her part. But he was trying to live like Christ and be an example, and she came around. She finally broke and submitted to him. And that's the goal. But husbands love. Now, the biggest problem is not the wife. The biggest problem is our own selfishness. All right? Most husbands, our real problem is not because we have a bad wife. It's because we have a bad nature. We're selfish individuals. So this is to us as husbands, and if you're a wife, you can get something out of this too, and understand one another. That's the goal, is to understand each other. And as the theme of this whole series is, play your position, you know. If you're the child, just be the child. Don't try to be the parent. If you're the parent, if you're the husband, don't try to be the wife. Don't try to be the husband. Play your position. Play your role. And here, number one, love her knowledgeably. As we go to 1 Peter chapter 3, we'll see this here. In 1 Peter chapter 3, love her knowledgeably, with knowledge. What does that mean? Seek to understand her needs, her weaknesses, her faults. Understand. Try to understand her background, where she's coming from. Study her. You know, my wife and I come from extremely different backgrounds. And she was raised in an Amish culture. And she didn't even get out of Amish until 12, 13 years old. Went into culture shock. I mean, her parents were 40 years old when they learned how to drive a car. You know, they'd holler whoa and then fly into the ditch because the car wouldn't stop when they hollered whoa. Stuff like that. I mean, it was just a different world. So, culture can be very different. And backgrounds and definitions of words, you know, just English words and definitions and understanding and stuff like that, you know. And the English language is weird anyway. We park in a driveway, we drive in a parkway. I mean, we're weird people anyhow. But for someone who spoke a Pennsylvania Dutch German dialect, and then you're trying to understand, you know, this English husband of yours, and there's, so there was some culture thing. No, it's not like if I'd have married someone from a foreign country, but it was close. And there's just some differences of opinions and differences ideas and thoughts and whatever. Seek to understand her needs, her weaknesses, her faults. Study her, understand her. We won't go to Ezekiel 16, but Ezekiel 16 talks about how that God saw Israel as just a helpless child and someone that no one wanted, and he adopted her and loved her and married her, so to speak. That's a picture there. But seek to understand her background, her needs, her faults. Study her. Study your wife. Understand what makes her tick. Understand what she needs, not just what she wants, but what she needs, and recognize things in her life that she needs help in or improvement in or whatever, and not just so you can tell her about it and give her a report card, but so that you can help her. And so 1 Peter chapter 3 talks about the wives, but then at the end in verse number 7, it says, likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel. Now, you see that weaker vessel, and you think, well, that's pretty derogatory. Not necessarily. If you go back to the likewise, all right, it says verse 7, likewise. Verse 1, there's a likewise. Likewise, ye wives. So apparently the husband and the wife are to be like somebody else. You know who they're to be like? You go back up into chapter 2 and you find out it's Jesus. he submitted to his father's authority and submitted himself to his father. And we are to leave. He left us an example, verse 21, chapter 2, to follow his steps. That's the likewise. So both the wife and the husband are to emulate Jesus. Let me ask you a question. Is Jesus lesser than God? No. But Jesus and God have different roles, different positions. God's the Father, Jesus is the Son. So the Son submitted to the Father, didn't he? The Son submitted to the Father and became obedient to death on the cross. The wife needs to emulate that submission as Jesus did to the Father. The weakness doesn't necessarily mean she's not equal, but it's kind of like if I'm in the shop and I need something to pound, I need something to pound out, you know, maybe something that's stuck, a bearing or something on the end of the hub of a wheel. I'm not going to go into the house and grab my wife's flower vase, all right? Because that's a weak vessel to be using on the iron. I'm going to find something that's appropriate. Now, is the flower vase, is it more expensive than the hammer I'm going to use? Probably. So see, being weaker doesn't mean it's less valuable. Being weaker, actually, it's more valuable. So that doesn't, it's not saying that she's not as valuable, but she has a different strength, and yet she has a different weakness, and we need to recognize that. And I know that we're living in a weird world where everything is all backwards, but the men are to be the masculine ones. The men, typically speaking, men are bigger, men have more muscle mass. Typically speaking, men play football, not women. Men do the wrestling. Why? Because they're the men, all right? When I think of a soldier, I think of a man. I'm sorry. There's a difference in roles, okay? That's not a downgrade on women. That's just because they're not as strong as a man. I think it's silly we'll stop with that. But anyhow, I think you know the point. And so giving honor unto her as unto the weaker vessel, that your prayers be not hindered, that you can be heirs together of the grace of life, that you can be one and you fit together and you are a perfect match, a perfect pair, a perfect tandem. So there are three areas that we can be knowledgeable in our love for our wives and love her knowledgeably. Obviously, number one, physical needs. And this is the one we only think about. This is the one that Hollywood's going to focus on, because this is the one that basically Hollywood and the world, this is pretty much all the one that they ever think about. All right? And it is important that we are physical and that we do meet the physical needs of one another. We don't need to talk about that too much right now. Someone said, you know, I was sitting in the airport with my wife and she looked across the way, clear across the other side of the room, and there was this couple sitting over there and they were holding hands. And my wife said, I bet you they're not married. Why? Because they're holding hands. And basically she was telling her husband, we don't hold hands anymore, you know. Isn't that sad? It shouldn't be that way. In fact, it should be the opposite. I like to hold my wife's hand. I used to be too proud and too tough and too worried about what everybody else thought, but that's stupid. I'm not saying, you don't usually see me walking around here holding hands with my wife because there's too much going on. We got stuff to do. Can't hold hands all the time. But I don't mind holding my wife's hand, and we need to recognize the importance of being physical and still like we were back when we were, you know, in puppy love or whatever it might be. But let's talk about the more important ones here. And really, I do mean that, more important. Her emotional needs. She desires security. She wants physical attention, of course. But when she wakes up and realizes, wait a minute, it's not all about physical. There's other things I need. Security. And guys, that security is not just the fact that you know how to shoot guns really well, all right? Or that you got really big muscles. Security in the fact that you are in charge and you're taking care of the needs, you're responsible. The weight of everything is on your shoulders, not hers. My wife knows that I handle the bills, but at the same time, she's the balancer. And I do that on purpose. I say, now I'll pay the bills, but then I would like for you to go back and just when the check register, you know, when the checking account statement comes, would you go through and balance, make sure I didn't mess up? And a lot of times she'll find a mess up. I like to do that just so that if I die tomorrow, she's familiar with the checkbook, okay? But I'm the guy that usually makes sure that we got, you know, I go through and I figure out how much is coming in and how much has got to go out. And that's my stress, all right? I think ladies are supposed to have a guy to do that, all right? I think that's the way God designed us. And I realize that not every wife, not every lady even in here has the privilege of having a husband to help you with some of that. The security of the fact that she doesn't have to go be the breadwinner, that he's going to find a job or two or three to pay the bills. That's how it's supposed to be. And along came in about the, I don't know, 60s or 70s, maybe even before I was born, came this idea of women's liberation. We're going to liberate the women. They're going to be so much happier because they're going to be able to be in charge of everything. Women are happier. And families aren't better off because now you got men and women both working. And it's not, once upon a time in America, the man worked, the wife stayed home. It was a good thing. It doesn't mean she just stayed home and watched soap operas or twiddled her thumbs. No, she had stuff that she could do. And just think how much better that is, because then when he comes home, there's just so much more that's been done, you know, because she's not worn out trying to do it. And the security of having the security of that he's in charge. Not he's sitting on the couch playing video games, and then once a week he goes down to the welfare office and gets some free money. That's not security. That's not what she really wants. She wants that security, not insecurity. We can talk about that a lot more, but we got to keep going. Endless capacity for love and affection. Like Dave Sorendorf said, he said, I've counseled different couples before, and I have never ever had a woman say to me, my problem is that he just loves me too much. You know, that's never the problem, you know. And he's just so affectionate, and it just bothers me so much. And it's never the problem, all right? It's the opposite. Love and affection. And, the old timer, his wife complained about the fact that he never says, I love you. And he said, well, told you that the day we got married. If it changes, I'll let you know. You know, that's dumb, you know. Because do you ever expect any physical attention since the day you got married? Well, yeah. Well, then you need to be saying it verbally and express it. Endless capacity for love and affection. They love surprises. They love thoughtfulness and affection. It doesn't even have to be physical necessarily, but just endless capacity for love and affection. She is a communicator. She wants to talk. She wants to visit. And and so then, like I was saying earlier, if you're not good at the language that each other speak, it can be a frustrating thing. She's a communicator. And she's also a responder. She's a responder. A lot of times, my wife responds to my attitude because that's what she is. You know, she's a responder. The sun is the light giver, and the moon is the light reflector. You know, and the moon reflects whatever the light comes off the sun. And our wives are reflective of what we are. And Dave Sommerdorf tells a story about himself, and it reminded me of a scene that all of us, I think, are familiar with. And if you're not, you should see it. But the old Christmas movie called It's a Wonderful Life. There's a scene in there where George Bailey is absolutely stressed beyond measure. It's not his fault, but his whole world's crashing down. And he comes home to his family. Y'all seen this? He comes home to his family, and his happy wife and his children are playing the piano, and he's not happy because everything that he counted on is falling apart. It's not his fault, and it's certainly not his family's fault, but he kind of takes it out on his family. And he yells at them, and, well, she's going to respond to that, you know? How does she respond to that? And so she's a responder. You need to understand that. And so Dave Sommerdorf said, he said, I did that. I came home, and I pretty much just unloaded on everybody. And then I stomped upstairs. And about 2 minutes later, I could hear my kids, squawking and squibbling and fighting with each other. And I could hear my wife scolding the kids. And I went back to the top of the stairs and looked down. What's wrong with you people? He said, just as soon as I said it, the Holy Spirit said, you're the problem, dude. they weren't doing that till you got home, you know, because women are the responder. And he realized, it's my fault, you know. And we set the tone. Guys, we do set the tone, and she responds to it. And so, wow. And, you know, when I see that scene with Jimmy Stewart acting that out, I feel its pain because I know what it's like. But I understand how foolish it is and how wrong it is to the rest of the family. She's the responder. letter E. She desires tenderness and intimacy, of course. She desires that. But can I just stop and say something? If you don't take care of A, B, C, and D, letter E is not something she really wants. You know? She's just not interested in letter E. You know, the tenderness and intimacy is just not going to be there if the other things aren't being taken care of. And she loves to be a priority in your life. All right? Now, with that, I want you to flip to the backside and look at that priority list on the right side. Judging by my actions, not what you know is the right answer, but judging by my actions, the order of priorities in my life is as follows. If you're the husband, you can fill that out. And I caution you to fill it out unless you're planning on tucking it away in your pocket where no one can see it. But what is number one of this list? Hobbies, friends, you know, the boys, going out with the boys. Church ministries, that sounds good. Personal walk with God. Work, the job. I mean, if I don't have a job, you're not going to be happy. Got to have a job. The wife, the children. What's the, you know what? On that list, I can tell you right now, wife should be number two. Wife should be number two. What should be number one? Personal walk with God. All right? Now, I don't know what it's like in your life right now. But if you want to get a real honest opinion, ask your wife to fill that out for you. Ask your wife to write down the numbers. Oops. Ouch. You know, I mean, you and I can fill out the numbers. I know how to do it. But one should be God. Two should be wife. And for me, work and ministries are the same. But here's what I would say. My church is more important than where I work, because I can get a different job better than I can necessarily find a better church. And so I would write it three and then four. And then after that, of course, children. Don't forget children. Children needs to be probably after wife. I'm sorry for missing that up there. But wife, children, church kind of goes with God, obviously. Work. So way down at the bottom should be friends and hobbies, right? But that's not usually how it goes. Hunting. Some guys are all about the woman making the food and taking care of the business so I can go hunting. You notice how many times women go to church and the men don't? Because he's off hunting or he's with the boys. And so this is a real checkup list for us to see how we're doing. And so just think about that. And find out for yourself, where are my priorities? Is God number one? And then is she number two? And then the children. And by the way, the children are not number two, you know. A lot of people stay married just for the kids. One of the saddest things I ever heard was a 16-year-old girl here years ago in this very community who told her friend, my mom and dad are just hanging together until I graduate from high school. It's a very sad statement. And what was even more sad is they didn't make it for her senior year. But a lot of parents are doing that. And you watch it. As soon as the last one leaves home, there's no glue anymore for the marriage. That's not how it's supposed to be. My kids know that my wife's number one. And here at Christmas time, they'll get presents, but she'll get presents. You know what I mean? Because I love her the most. And they might say, what do you do? Dad, why are you always giving her stuff? Yeah. Because she's more important than you are, you know. I just tell them that, you know. She's more important than you are. And by the way, kids need to know that. They need to know that your marriage is more important than they are. That's actually security. It's security for the kids. Let's keep going. Number three. Number one, physical needs. Number two, emotional needs. Number three, love her knowledgeably in her spiritual needs. And you know what? She has spiritual needs. But you know what will motivate her and help her more than anything? To follow your example. She needs to know that her husband walks with God. My wife is very much secure and confident when she knows that I'm actually praying and reading my Bible. When I'm actually talking to God, and what I've decided to do is actually God's will, and it proves to be true. That's a secure feeling that she gets. That's what she, so, and then, and it challenges her. She wants to have a spiritual walk with the Lord. A lot of times, the wife has the spiritual leadership and not the man. Don't ever make that your home. And if you have a very spiritual wife, that's just a great challenge for you, because that means you've got to keep on your toes. That's a good thing. But love her knowledgeably. Understand and know her needs, her physical needs, emotional needs, spiritual needs. And then secondly, love her sacrificially. And we go to Philippians chapter number 2. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 5, sacrificing, all right? Verse 5 says, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. Remember, husbands, are we're supposed to be like Christ, supposed to love our wives as Christ, who being in the form of robbery, thought it not, excuse me, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of men, and being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Sacrificially, to love her sacrificially as Christ. Did Christ die for the church? Did he die for us? Yes. Would you die for your wife? Would you give up? If you've never seen that movie, Fireproof, it's worth watching. And one of the turning points, of course, it's just a fictional story, but one of the turning points in that movie is when the husband takes his boat savings, his $25,000 savings for his boat, his dream boat, and buys his wife's mother the medical bed and medical needs that she needed. Pays for his wife's mother's issues with his $25,000 boat money. That's the turning point in the whole video. Because that's when the wife realizes he really does love me. Because when you're willing to take your $25,000 of boat money and spend it on your mother-in-law, whoa. I mean, think about it. I mean, something's changed. And so I encourage you, if you've never seen that, it's called Fireproof. It's worth watching. And love her sacrificially. See, that's when you're really demonstrating Christ. Now, I say that's the turning point. That's the outward turning point. But the turning point was when the husband got saved. Because then he found out that Jesus sacrificed for me. And I haven't really been loving my wife sacrificially. I've been loving her selfishly. A lot of times we buy her flowers only because we're hoping to get something in return for the flowers. A lot of times we quote-unquote sacrifice for her only because we're expecting something in return. That isn't really, that's not sacrifice. Sacrifice is when you know there cannot be a payment made back. When you know it's going to cost you something. There's a funny scene in there where he calls, when he first, you know, when his dad challenges him to love his wife, he calls the flower shop and says, how much is a nice bouquet of flowers? Oh, ouch, he says. Just give me, what's the cheapest you got? Oh, okay, I'll take that. You know, and he sends her these pathetic looking flowers. Why? Because it wasn't really a sacrifice on his part at that point. But loving her sacrificially. 1 Corinthians 7:33 says, that the husband wants to please his wife. Now, please understand that if your wife's not right with God, you can't just please her all the time, all right? But who do you seek to please? When you wake up in the morning, who is it that's on your mind? When I wake up in the morning, I'll just be honest with you. When I wake up in the morning, typically I am on my mind. My sore muscles, my attitude of having to get up because I want to sleep longer, it's cold in the room, or whatever, you know, or breakfast, you know, I'm on my mind, right? And most of us, we're just human being, and so selfishness is natural. But to seek to make her pleased, happy, content, loving her sacrificially. Romans 5, verse 6 through 8. For when we were yet without strength in due time, Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely for a righteous man will one die, yet peradventure for a good man some would even dare to die. But God commendeth his love toward us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Sacrifice. Christ died for us. Now it says, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Well, she's not. She does this and this. Well, yeah, that's your perfect opportunity to love her anyway. Christ died for us even though he knew we were sinners. A lot of times we don't let our spouse know what we're really like until after we get married. Kind of like a salesman, you know. We never show them the whole thing. But that's when you love them, when you've gotten familiar with their flaws. And Jesus loved us even though he knew our flaws. And he was willing to make a commitment with us anyway. He knew we were sinners. See, that's according to knowledge. I know you have this in your life, but I still love you anyway. Wow. See, it's the example of Christ is what makes all this work. Because we see how Jesus loved us. And we see how he still loves us. Anybody here mess up with Jesus this week? Hurt his feelings? Yeah. But does he still love you? Yeah. See, he hasn't thrown you out. He hasn't turned his back on you. And so sacrificially is like Christ, even though we're sinners. See, a lot of us, I think we go, well, yeah, I mean, of course I love him. He's so good to me. Of course I love her. She's so good to me. But what happens when they're not good to you anymore? Or when they've done something hurtful? You know, or whatever it might be. That's the sacrificial loving. Love her knowledgeably. Love her sacrificially. Look at Romans chapter 15. We're in Romans 5. Go up to Romans 15. Remember we talked about the weaker vessel a little bit ago? Read this. Romans 15:1. We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak and not to please ourselves. That's what God does. He's the strong one, and he bears the infirmities of the weak and not pleasing just himself. We like to use our strength to make others serve us. Being the husband and being the head of the home, I had a hard time going to my in-law's house. Not because I have a bad in-law. I have good father-in-law, mother-in-law, very good people. And I didn't really understand, but I was just frustrated. I'd go to their house and I'd just be kind of frustrated and just kind of not happy. And then one day I heard a preacher preach a message, and I realized he gave an illustration of himself, and it helped me to understand what I was going through. He said, I went to my in-laws and I found out something. And when he said it, I realized, that's me. Yep, there it is. He said, everywhere else in my life, he said, I'm the pastor of the church. I'm the head of my home, my wife, my kids. They do what I say. I'm in charge, and I'm number one, and I'm the boss. He said, I go to my in-law's house, and everybody else is important but me. My in-laws don't really care if I come. They're just glad that I brought the wife and the kids, you know. They're not so excited about me, and that bothers me because I'm used to me being number one. And when the pastor said that, I'm like, yep, there's my problem right there. I'm used to getting everything I want. And when I'm at my in-law's house, it's not about me. My wife wants to talk to her parents more than me. My kids are all about the grandparents. And I realize that's me. And when we are so used to using our strength to get what we want, you know, make others serve us, I'm used to just telling my wife and kids, you do this, and they'll do it. And wait a minute, how about I just do it? How about I just serve and recognize the sacrifices? I remember one guy said, typically in my home, he said, I'm not bragging about this, this is a shame, but typically at my home, if there are 10 pieces of pizza and there's five of us, or excuse me, if there's 10 pieces of pizza and there's six of us, guess who will refrain from having all of her pizza? My wife. She'll figure out how everyone else can have two slices and she'll just go with a... Why? She's more of the sacrificer than I am, he said, and that's wrong. The husband should be the lead sacrificer. We should be giving up some of our wants and dreams and be the sacrificer. So love her knowledgeably, love her sacrificially, love her faithfully at all times, consistently. There's another passage that mirrors Ephesians. It's Colossians. Colossians chapter 3. It's exactly like Ephesians, only it reads a little bit different, and the verses are not nearly as long. It's just very more condensed. Colossians chapter 3 and verse number 18. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as it is fit in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives. And verse 19, and be not bitter against them. Children, obey your parents. Verse 19, husband, love your wives, and be not bitter against them. At all times, consistently. I don't understand why this happens, but I know it happens. Somebody will cheat on somebody, and so then the other one will go cheat on them to get back at them. Husbands, love your wives, and be not bitter against them. Bitterness doesn't answer anything. Bitterness doesn't fix anything. Love her faithfully at all times. When there's been an adultery in a marriage, the hardest thing but the best thing is for the other spouse to still be faithful and loving and forgiving and the strong one. Not the bitter one, but the strong one. Love her knowledgeably. Love her sacrificially. Love her faithfully at all times, constantly. By the way, that really helps with the whole security thing that we talked about earlier and the emotions. When there's always a constant faithfulness. And let her be not just all times, but for all time. Loyally. Loyal. Loyal to her. There's been people out there whose spouse lost it. You know what I mean? Mentally, they got Alzheimer's, or they got dementia. They lost all, you know, they got paralyzed. They lost all physical capabilities. So there's not a lot of physical, things happening between the two, because one of them has a serious handicap. For all time, loyally. Constantly in the present and all time. Till death do you part. That's what the Bible teaches. Till death do us part. All right? And then lastly, love her wisely. That's our last point. Love her knowledgeably, love her sacrificially, love her faithfully, and love her wisely. Back in Ephesians chapter 5, that 25 through 28 again, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church, gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with a washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. You notice here Jesus is cleaning up the church. He marries the church, and then his desire is to get her washed up and cleaned up. And so loving her wisely is to recognize the importance of a purposeful love, not just a doting love. Not just flowers and chocolates, but a real purposeful love, that there's a goal here, there's a purpose, and it's to help you to grow and to get better at things. Why? Well, you know what I did yesterday? I clipped every one of my fingernails and my toenails. You say, who cares? Well, you know what I did that for? Because if I let them go, especially my toes, guess what happens? Ingrown toenail. Real major problems. Can't walk. So yesterday I took the time, and it's not fun. And because I let it go a little while, it was kind of hard. Dig in there and, you know, make your toes bleed a little bit. Get all the sharp edges off your toenails. But you know why I did it? Personal care. Maintenance. Taking care of my personal interest. If I'm a good husband, she is part of my body. Two become one. One flesh. Personal care. Most guys don't have a clue what their wife needs. They think they do, but they don't. Personal care. Love her wisely. I can see she needs this here. And you know what the goal is? Is to guide her to be like a Proverbs 31 woman. And we're not going to read Proverbs 31 because we don't have time. But you look at Proverbs 31. That is the ideal wife and mother. Proverbs 31. My father has a plaque of Proverbs 31 in his house. Proverbs 31. That's what you want for a wife and a mother. And if you're, you know, if you're Gunner and you're not married yet, Proverbs 31. That's who you should be looking for. That's the kind of wife you should have, a Proverbs 31 wife. And if you have a wife and she's not there yet, you should help her to get there, to be a Proverbs 31 woman. So how do you do that? Personal care. Number one, you need to act as a guide for her attitude. Not in an ugly way, but in a kind way, but a serious way, show her when her attitude is wrong. You know, let her know, hey, that attitude is not a good attitude. You've got a problem here. We need to work on this. There's been a couple preachers, Jim Cook and C.T. Spear and others, that have said that in conversation with the wife, they realize she's not saved. She thinks she is, but she's not. She's not really given a real clear salvation. Boy, that's an opportunity for you to say, hey, let's talk about this. Sometimes we're afraid. My dad was afraid to talk to my mom one time. He should have, but he didn't. They just got married, and she wanted to try this new hair dye. And she dyed her hair, and she wrapped up in a towel, and it was supposed to be some certain color. I don't remember, blonde or something. I don't remember exactly what color it was supposed to be. But anyway, she unwrapped it in the car on the way to the hospital. I think it was, maybe she was spraying it with me, I'm not sure. But they weren't married very long. And when she unwrapped her hair, she didn't even bother to look in the mirror to see what it looked like. She couldn't see it very well in the car anyway. But when she got out, my dad realized her hair is green. But he's too scared to tell her. He should have. He got out, he looked at her. He didn't want to say, because he didn't know. Oh, well, maybe she wanted green. I don't know, you know. And so he said he's looking at her late. He walked right into a signpost. Boom, you know. But he doesn't tell her. So they both go into the doctor's office. She goes into the bathroom. She stops and looks in the mirror. Rah! She is so mad at him. Why didn't you let me walk out in public like this? I didn't know what to say. I didn't know if that's what you wanted, you know. Look, husbands, you got to say something sometimes. I mean, look, they might not know what they really look like. They might not. I'm not just talking about hair color. Guide her attitude. Help her. Number two, her associations. You know what I believe? I believe with all my heart. Sometimes husbands need to tell their wives, that lady's not a good girlfriend for you. That girlfriend's not good for you. I don't like. Just like when my parents did with me when I was a kid. You've heard me say this. I think I said it last week. I don't like it when you hang around Kenny. I want you to hang around Eric. I think husbands need to do that sometimes with wives, with their wife. You know, I don't appreciate some of the girlfriends. They talk about stuff and they put things in your mind. Don't go there. And so guide her in associations, because you are, or you soon will be, what your friends are. And there's just some bad girlfriends out there for wives. Watch out for that. And then activities. There are times when I'll say to my wife, you need to not do that. It's just, and not because it's a bad activity, it's just too much. You're overloading. And there's times when, as a husband, I need to say, hold it. that's not going to happen anymore. We're going to stop that. We're going to find some, you know, a lot of times it's the kids can do that. You don't need to be doing that. You know what that is? It's Joshua 24:15. You can write it at the bottom of the paper. Joshua 24:15, Joshua said, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. He just took charge. He didn't say, as soon as I find out from Mrs. Joshua if I have permission, we're going to serve the Lord. He just said, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. He took the lead. He was the leader. And husbands are to be the leader. And I know today we don't have many good leadership in with men today. There's not many men manly leaders. And we need that. We're hurting for manly leadership. And it's because we're not following the Bible. So we're over time. We've got to stop. But if you'd like to get copies, or if you'd like to listen to more of this, maybe listen to it from a different preacher, let me know. But we'll talk about wives next week. So make sure you get back here next week. We'll talk about the wives, and then we'll finish up after that. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for the Bible. Thank you for your word. Thank you for opportunity. in your word to learn. Help us to realize you gave us the greatest example in the world to follow. And so help us to realize there's no excuses for not having. We have the owner's manual. We have the Bible. We have the best instruction book there is. Help us to follow it and do it. In Jesus' name, amen.